production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday Drive. It's a summer day. It's 90 degrees. It's humid. There's a chance of afternoon showers. That's sort of the forecast is pretty much the same unless something crazy happens. So welcome in, everybody. The Thursday edition means Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew's at the controls. Ferg, how you doing, man?
Doing well.
It is it's the last couple of days before there will be a good bit of news. I don't know that I would say news, but there'll be a lot of stuff since SEC Media Days is underway starting on Monday.
Yeah, looking forward to that going down there.
When are you heading down?
Monday morning. I was originally going to get down there Monday night and be fine, and then I have to be down in Tampa a little earlier than usual to do a work thing, and so I had to change my flight. So I'm leaving at like 7 in the morning on Monday. But
well, you become an early riser now. I mean,
yeah.
Auburn basketball. My goodness.
This is the first time in the summer where I have routinely been up before 7 o'clock.
There's no reason to be up at that time of day.
But Auburn basketball has been practicing at 7:30 here these last couple weeks, and so I've been up there, which is not bad because – my wife has an actual job and works from home, so she's usually up and moving around by then, and so I feel a little bit better. I feel a little bit better about my life, like,
yeah,
because usually she'll wake up and go.
You're not in the bed. You're not.
She'll wake up, like, go exercise a little bit before she starts to work at 8, and I'll be asleep the whole time. I'll roll out of bed after 8 and be like, all right, here goes, it's time to start our day. So this does make feel a little bit better, but. Oh, yeah, it's got a lot of good stuff this week. Going to basketball practice, got to talk to Thomas Dowd and Kevin Overton yesterday. And, it's kind of hard to believe we were talking about it yesterday. They're only like 2.5 weeks away from going to Greece.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to. I mean, because, classes get started the middle of August. So I wasn't sure exactly when they were going, but I went, hey, it's got to be pretty soon now.
Very soon, and going to play a couple games out there, and, should be a good trip.
It's got to be a great trip.
Yeah, I mean, and they've got a, they've put in a lot of good work here. I've been at practice these last couple of weeks since they've got the full squad in, and, a lot of good on good, a lot of scrimmage work, a lot of guys.
Yeah, yesterday was scrimmage, right?
Yeah, and they've been doing a little bit of scrimmaging a lot, but yeah, yesterday I got to see a good bit of a scrimmage, and then today, kind of more of a teaching instructional kind of cleanup day.
Well, that makes sense. After a scrimmage, then you want to come back. Here's what you did right. Here's what you should do.
A lot of drill work today. But yeah, it was good. And then to get to talk to, I like the balance of it where you got to talk to a guy in Thomas Dowd who's brand new and a lot of excitement around him. And we can talk about kind of that with him because I wrote a piece on him at the Observer today. Mm-hmm. And then you got a guy like KO who's coming back. And I think one of the things is, I don't go into a ton of details and specifics about like what happened at practice, part of the agreement. But I will say, and KO talked about this a little bit yesterday as well, you can really tell if you're out there these last couple of weeks how much Todd Pettiford and Kevin Overton are really taking it upon themselves to be the leaders. Like you see that like they're more vocal, they're more taking charge than they may have been even last season where, obviously KO was new, Taha was stepping into a brand new role. Both of these guys, they're the leaders, they're the returners, they're the guys who are gonna drive a lot for this team this season. And I think it's been cool to kind of see some of that evolution that both of those guys are looking like the veterans that they are for this team and trying to pull all these new guys together.
Yeah, and obviously, Thomas, a guy that everybody has seen his numbers, and you see the points and rebounds. But to hear the comments and, you know, talking with a couple of folks that have watched some as well as you, I mean, he's a guy that does more than just that. I mean, he's one of those blue collar type guys, which you really need. I mean, it's great to have stars, and not that he, you know, couldn't be a star either. But I mean, he's one of those guys that'll do some of the small things and the hard work that turns into rebounds and points.
Correct. And, you know, Kevin Overton said it yesterday. You know, he was talking about this scrimmage, and KO was on Dowd's side on his team, and they came back and won the scrimmage. And he said, you know, we won because of Dowd. Like, we won because of him. And he said, we're going to win basketball games this season because we have Thomas Dowd. And the big thing for him is it's the rebounding. His rebounding is stellar. He's one of the most productive rebounders in college basketball coming back this season.
Is he a guy who some guys can just jump out of the gym. Other guys know how to position themselves and have that timing knack of when, you know, a lot of times the ball goes up, and if it's going to bounce one time on the rim, you're going to see three guys jump up, and they're on the way down as the ball's coming off.
Yeah, he's really good at timing it up. He's got a really good feel for when to go, how it's coming off the rim. And additionally, he's just got a really good work ethic. He's just a high motor type of player. That's how he wins. Mm-hmm. He's a good basketball player. He's 6'8". You know, he can do some of everything. But he's not this incredible athlete. He's not this guy who's, like, super physical and strong. He just makes really good, like, high IQ, heads-up basketball plays routinely. And, you know, last season he led the Sun Belt in rebounding doing that. All 3 years he was at Troy, including when he was a freshman. He wasn't even a regular starter the whole time. He was in the top 10 in the Sun Belt in rebounding. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy who for years now has been doing it really, really well. And, like in that scrimmage, I mean, it's just countless possessions in, you know, second, third chance opportunities created by Thomas Dowd going and making a play. And making something happen there. And so I think that's the big thing with him is just he is going to hustle. He is going to really fight. And that's just kind of his game. Now, I think he's pretty confident with the ball in his hands. He can you know, stretch the floor as a shooter. I think he's a smart defender. Troy was a pretty good defensive team, especially that first season they went to the tournament with him. He's got all that. But, like, the rebounding is really remarkable because – you don't get a ton of guys at his size, at 6'8", who
unless they're just freaks, unless they're guys that are just playing above the rim.
And it's just he's got that kind of knack for it. You know, I was looking it up. His rebounding percentage last season at Troy was 15%, which means basically 15% of all misses when he was on the floor he rebounded. And that's a pretty big number.
Yeah, it is.
It's a huge number.
Considering there are nine other guys on the floor, and that would be 150% of the misses, which if everybody was at the same percentage.
Yeah, and then you look at you kind of dig into it a little bit more, and you look at guys who've been really good at rebounding, like Jani Broome, Dylan Carwell. You know, last season Keyshawn Murphy had good rebounding numbers. But Auburn has not had a guy who is 6'8", or is less than 6'10". Have a rebounding rate that good since Horace Spencer. And I see a lot of that in, like, Horace obviously was a lot more of a rim protector, kind of like small center.
Thomas is a much better offensive
small center, but it's very much that kind of, like, what was Horace Spencer known for? He was going to bust his tail every possession and make it tough. Like, he fought for rebounds really, really well. And so I think with Dowd, it's like you look at the amount of shooting Auburn could have around him. You know, say he's the starting four, which if Auburn had to start a game tomorrow, I would think he would be your starting power forward. If you had him at the four, you know, and you're talking about a lineup that has Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton and Montas at 1, 2, and 3, those are three at their best, like elite shooters and elite scorers. You don't necessarily need that guy to go be, you know, 15, 20-point game for you. But what you can get is if he rebounds really, really well and he fits and he's kind of that glue guy that connects all of it together, you can see where it's a pretty good match. So yeah, he's a very interesting character. And I was looking at it, you know, when we were talking to him. You know, he's from Dothan, and he said that when he was in high school, he was playing an AAU team. He wasn't really getting a ton of playing time. And his dad was like, hey, you're going to have to just do something to try to make it so that you're going to get on the floor. You know, and so they were like, all right, rebounding. Like, I'm going to be the guy who goes above and beyond to get rebounds. And by the time he finished his career at Dothan, his senior year, I think he averaged 19 points and 16 rebounds a game.
Mm-hmm.
At 6'8". I mean, again, pretty tall for a high school player, but, like,
yeah,
to average 16 rebounds a game in anything is crazy. And when he went to Troy, he just picked up where he left. I mean, he's been a really, really good rebounding guy. And so offensive rebounds, the hustle plays, those are the kind of things that he does a really good job of. And I think Auburn's got so much firepower in the backcourt that they've added, that length and that height with the big man up front, that, you know, if you get a guy like him who can kind of can connect it all together and not have to go be the superstar but do little things really well, he's the type of player you really need. And I think he's done really well. And his teams in scrimmages have been doing a lot of winning because that's just the kind of player he is.
And that kind of player who has the ability to shoot, and he does,
yes,
can be the kind of guy that in games, if teams start concentrating too much on – you know, Tahad or KO or, you know, worrying about the post, he's a guy that can give you, you know, 15, 20.
Well, and the other
any night.
And the other thing I think works really, really well for him is, you know, we talked about it yesterday, but he gets all these offensive rebounds. That's kind of been what his knack has been. Defensive rebounding, he's really, really good. But offensive rebounding, it's like he's pretty special in that regard. And the best time to shoot a three-pointer is off of an offensive rebound, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right,
he's a guy that he said, look, on this team, I can pull down an offensive rebound, and there's going to be at least a couple of guys on the perimeter that I have zero hesitation to fire it out there and say, if I can get him a clean catch-and-shoot look off his offensive rebound, it's going in. And so you think about, you know, Auburn did it at times last season, but you think about two seasons ago, three seasons ago with those teams for Auburn where, you know, it's that inside-out game with Janai Broom. And, like, Broom did such a good job of, hey, you feed it in there, and then if they collapse, you kick out. But he also did a really good job getting those rebounds and kicking out off.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a team that's got a lot more three-point shooting threats this season than they had, you know, last season. And so you get a guy like him who's going to say, all right, let me get you a second opportunity. Let me get you a third opportunity on this possession. And you sort of, it's like with how Auburn, I thought, did a really good job of surrounding Tahad Pettiford and those big men with shooters. You know, Dowd plays into that part as well, because if the best time to shoot a three is off an offensive rebound, he's a guy who's really good at getting those offensive rebounds and does a really good job of distributing off of him. And so you've been able to see that, you know, at these practices where he's just got a really good, so like, go get it to somebody else. And Auburn's got a lot of catch and shoot weapons on this team, so he's a really good teammate for them.
Is there somebody that you could compare him, his style of play to? Is there somebody he sort of reminds you of? Or, I mean, a lot of times, you know, that's a question that people get asked all the time. And sometimes it's not. It's like, well, no, they're just sort of themselves. But I just wondered.
It's tough because, like, I don't know if there's anybody who immediately comes to mind at Auburn that I've covered that is like him, where it's like, okay, he's a rebounding and like hard work kind of specialist, but he's not like, you know, different player and obviously a different offensive player, I would say, but he's like, I don't know, he's kind of like if Chris Moore was kind of a guy,
yeah,
you know, and Chris was close. I mean, Chris was 6'6",
but yeah,
like a little bit more of like a true forward.
Mm-hmm.
Guy.
Chris was definitely a blue collar guy. And
yeah, the junkyard dog. I mean, he did, and so there was a lot of that. Like, there was that. I guess it was two seasons ago where, you know, Chris obviously didn't score a lot when he was on the floor, but he had this crazy rate where he kept getting offensive rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had these games where it'd be like, you know, Chris had 6 rebounds, 5 of them were on the offensive glass, and like just kept plays alive. So you got some of that to his game as well. And then it's like, you know, it's kind of interesting because he is a very unique type of four. He could play the three for this team, especially if they want to go like big lineup in that. But it's you know, he's more of like not like a Chaney, not like a, you know, some of those guys.
Chaney is so much more athletic than a lot of people realize.
Oh,
and you're starting to see that, you know, now.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, different than a guy like Keyshawn Hall, different guy than like Sway last season. Mm-hmm. I think he's a guy that kind of just has his own mold on offense, but like that very much that dirty work. It's like maybe the best comparison to this. I was talking about this with somebody. Is like I think Thomas Dowd, like senior year Thomas Dowd, makes me think of like. And obviously he did well when he was at Auburn. But, like, say if a guy like Chris Moore played in the mid-majors for a couple of years and was a star, and then mm-hmm. you got him later. And so it's like, okay, here's this dude who makes a lot of really good, does some of everything as hustle, and he's got the stats to back it up. And now you're putting him in at a high major. That's kind of the closest comparison I can think of with him. But, really good player. And, again, I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to give you, like, double-digit points a night. But I think he's going to turn in a lot of winning basketball for you. And, you know, if your fourth or fifth option on the floor is that guy,
goes
a long, long way. You don't necessarily need him to be, you know, like he averaged. He was a good scorer at Troy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to have to be that guy at Troy.
No,
but
right.
If he's that rebounder, I mean, he'll get a ton of playing time, and Auburn will be better for it. I thought Kevin Overton had a really interesting comment about that, where he said, you know, he's a winner. You know, his team does a lot of winning. He's going to keep us in games. He's going to be the reason we win games. And he said he's been exactly what we thought he was going to be when we recruited him. Like everything he said he was, everything he saw on film since he's gotten here, he's been that guy. And to hear KO say that, because him and Taha were very instrumental in scouting these portal guys and helping them out.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, when Auburn brought those guys back, they were like, hey, we want y'all – tell us what you think about these guys, like on film,
it's going to be guys that you're going to be playing with and you're going to be counting on and you're going
to
be getting the ball.
And so to hear KO say, like, this is the dude we heard about. This is what he said he was going to be. This is what we saw on film, and he's done it from day one here. And I thought that's a really good stamp of approval for a guy that is going to be a leader of this team.
No question about it. All right, you mentioned senior Thomas Dowd. We've got five for
yep,
five
correct,
now.
Correct.
I mean, did anybody ask him about? I mean,
no,
it's early to be asking somebody about that. But
yeah.
I mean, he's not a guy that at least right now you project as well. He's definitely going to be mm-hmm. playing professionally next year. He could. But I mean, he's a guy that could possibly give you 2 years.
Correct. And, you know, players haven't talked about it as much because obviously, like you said, really early. But I do remember when the 5-5 rule back in April, when that was about to become a thing, and we talked to Stephen Pearl at an ambush event, he was very open. He was like, we've got a handful of guys on this team could all come back. And so that's what they really were excited about the potential of that. So it's like Kevin Overton's one of those
mm-hmm.
guys. You know, Thomas Dowd's one of those guys. I would imagine – I think Adam Olson would have that flexibility.
He would.
Kimball would have that flexibility. Mm-hmm. You know, Kimball would have that eligibility remaining as well. And the rest of the guys are kind of – Montas is kind of the exception to the rule because he's, you know, his own thing. But, like, I think – Buki and all those guys have multiple years. Todd obviously mm-hmm. has multiple years of eligibility remaining. But yeah, some of those seniors. That's what I like about the makeup of this team going into next season is they got older, they got more experienced. But it's not like
everybody's going to be gone after this year.
Yeah, you're not definitively having to say the reset button's going.
Yeah,
we
got to go find another dozen next year.
Correct. Like, you know, and you know, Stephen Pearl told me this. Earlier this summer when we had the one-on-one interview with him, he was pretty forthcoming about it. He's like, look, this day and age, if you can bring four, maybe get five guys back, that's the goal. And
right.
It's like Auburn is a position, could bring back a lot more than that. So that gets him in a good spot for that continuity moving forward.
All right, we're just underway here on the Thursday Drive. That's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio along with Bill. Drew is at the controls. You can join in. Give us a call on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390. We're just underway, so come on in and join us.
The Drive with Ben and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson here in the studio. Drew's at the controls. Ferg, We mentioned media days, SEC media days next week, Auburn up Tuesday morning.
Yep.
And no surprise, really, I guess, in the three. I mean, we talked about it last week, and We had a couple of other guys as possibilities, but those are pretty much the three.
I'm giving myself 2.5 out of 3 on that one.
I'm going a full 2 because I had Byram and Champ. Mm-hmm. And then I hadn't thought about Alex until Jason mentioned it Tuesday, and I went, right. That's a slam dunk.
Slam dunk for Byram and Alex. And I said it was going to be either Champ or I also
– Did you think was it Cody Sigler? Who was the other guy? I'm trying to remember.
Rayshon Pleasant.
Yeah, okay.
Because he's getting he's going to be like first-team All-SEC kicker-turner and, he's the most experienced guy
and he's another good guy to talk to.
Right.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Champ. Really interesting. I wrote it earlier this week at the Observer. Champ Anthony. I did the math. He is going to have the fewest career snaps of anybody who's ever been at Auburn at SEC Media Day since Jeremy Johnson.
And that's interesting because he's been at Auburn longer than some of the guys that have gone and represented Auburn at Media Days.
Correct. 3 years he has had a little over 400 injuries. Snaps. Yeah, the injuries have really rocked him.
It's not because he hasn't been good enough to be out there. It's just injuries have prevented him from playing more
correct.
Snaps.
And you know, he said something in the spring when we talked to him that was interesting. He was like, look, I'm pretty good when I can stay out there. I just need to stay out there. And I looked it up. He has played 9 games at Auburn where he's had 20 or more snaps, at least 20 snaps in a game, defensive snaps in a game. He's done that 9 times. Auburn's 6-3 when that happens. And it's like Auburn hadn't done a whole lot of winning.
No,
and
you're right.
So he's
you're
a guy,
right.
But he is a guy that, like, when he's out there, he plays pretty well. And the sad thing for him is that he just keeps getting hurt.
And it's different things.
It's different things. Last season, I would have loved to see, if he doesn't break his thumb against Baylor, I would have loved to have seen what he would have done with a fully healthy year.
Because
by the time he was able to come back, you had Eric Winters had broken out, and you had these young guys you were rotating. So he had to be kind of more of a rotational piece, which is really valuable. But the main reason why Champ Anthony's going to this thing is because since he got to Auburn, and especially over this past year, he is a guy that has been widely known as a leader.
Absolutely.
And even when he hasn't been playing much, even when he's been sidelined, he has been a guy that
is like coaching, helping coach.
And big locker room presence. He's the guy who rallies the troops, and he's the guy who held the dudes together last season when all the losing was happening. He's a guy that, he's a guy that has done a very good job providing stuff when you didn't get to play, and that's really
that's
cool.
Really tough to do.
That's really tough to do and really rare.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I wrote about it in my piece. If he had left at any point in these last couple years, hey, nobody would have blinked an
absolutely.
Eye.
Absolutely.
Just like, you know what, man? Hey, you need a reset. Go somewhere where he hadn't been hurt.
Yeah, maybe you have better luck somewhere.
Fresh start. Go for it. And he stayed. And, and again, you're going to go to Media Days, and it's going to be, and for Auburn, it's like, look, Byron Brown. And there's, I think there's 9 quarterbacks going to this thing this year. There's going to be all these dudes that have all SEC and all American type of hype and these stats and these award winners. It's going to be a lot of these big names. And that's cool. And Auburn's bringing a couple guys that are really, well-known players at their positions. But I also think it's really cool that, especially in this day and age of college football, where guys can leave in any moment, and nobody, really wants to think about sticking around and toughing it out in difficult circumstances. Champ Anthony got that invite. Champ Anthony's going to go represent Auburn. He's going to be a great representative for Auburn. And on top of that, it's like, I think that's just, it's something that should be celebrated. Because, those guys don't get a whole lot of spotlight because there's not very many of them anymore. So, shout out to Champ. I think he's going to do a great job. He's a great interview. And he can talk about all his teammates really, really well. He comes from a place of being a leader. He comes from a place of being a guy who was here last year and desperate to be a part of the team that gets Auburn out of this slump. Well deserved. Really, really well deserved. I'm glad he's getting to go.
And, I was thinking about this. I mentioned it probably the last couple of days. But, you look at the 3 guys that are going representing Auburn, and Alex is probably the guy that was the most highly touted coming out of high school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Champ was not. I mean, he was a late addition for Auburn, signing class.
Yep.
As a sophomore 3 years ago. And then Byram, of course, was a 3-star coming out of high school. So, I mean, these aren't guys that were super highly touted. Alex was well known, but kickers never get all the stars and everything anyway.
And I think that's just kind of this team, right? You know, it's like this is a team that's going to be built on, you know, familiarity, continuity, and that more than just raw star power. Now, there's some star power on this team. Xavier Atkins is an All-American type of player. There's some really good players on this team that are going to get those accolades, and there were some guys on this team who were really good recruits coming out of high school. But I think the main kind of like the ethos of this team is this is a team that is going to be built on –
Hey, you talk blue collar with Thomas Dowden basketball. I think that's what the
somebody asked
thought
me for,
is here.
Somebody asked me for the mailbag tomorrow at the Observer about like the vibes around the team and all that, and I was talking about kind of from internally the vibe I continue to get with this team is that you look around and you've got a bunch of guys who are hungry to prove that they belong and want to take advantage of this opportunity. I'm not saying Auburn hadn't had guys in years past who weren't that kind of way.
Oh, no. But I think there are more.
There are more of those
guys
now.
You went out and got from the transfer portal.
Correct. And you've got some dudes who are big-name transfers or big-name recruits, and, like, you know, obviously they're here still here for a reason. You still got some of those guys. But I think you've got, with the USF guys, with guys like Cody Sigler, all these others, where it's just like, all right, I belong at this level. I belong playing in the SEC, and like I'm ready to take advantage of it and prove people wrong. And I think that's the kind of vibe that this team is going to carry itself. It's got some star power. It's got some talent. It's got some recruiting stars behind it. But for the most part, it is a team kind of like with Alex Golish about. It's about making like proving that you belong, bang right away, and making that kind of impact. And I think you know a guy like Champ and Byram to an extent. You know, obviously Byram has a lot of...
Yeah, but he's making a move from you know, USF.
A lot of those
guys, SEC.
Those guys have that kind of vibe about them, and I think that's what makes them pretty good representatives.
Oh, I agree. And there's another similarity in that. That's sort of the feel that Coach Dye's first team had. Now there was some talent. Doug Barfield had recruited some really good talent, but you know, if there were a transfer portal back then, Auburn would have had a lot of guys that probably would have gone. And they had one, the guy who was going to be the next great running back at Auburn was Sam DeJarnette. And he transferred to Southern Miss, and all of a sudden, you know, Coach Dye comes in and he didn't have a proven running back. He goes with Lionel James, who was an unproven 5'6" guy. Mike Edwards, a 6'4" receiver, wearing number 89, is playing running back. And you've got Ron O'Neill, a freshman, 250-pound freshman. It was one of the strangest-looking backfields you'll ever see. 5'6", 6'4", flanking a 5'10", 250-pound fullback. But, I mean, that was a team that worked. They weren't going to be outworked. And they had chips on their shoulder. They had something to prove because it hadn't been what people thought it would be for those few years under Doug.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, there are a lot of similarities in just the mindset, and I think what you're hoping to see from this team is getting out there and just, you know, working their backsides off.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I wasn't around for
Pat Dyer. That's why I was feeling
no, but, but I'm saying
but
this.
I mean, it's really cool to look back at that and go,
And, I mean, you know this, so, like, I'll ask you, like, you know, what I know about Pat Dye and all that, and it was, you know, what I've heard from people, but for someone who experienced it and was there when, you know, who's around, I get some kind of Pat Dye vibes from Golish of
no
like,
question.
we're going to outwork everybody, and we're not scared.
That's right.
You know, he's a guy that has been very, very clear about, yes, this is a tough job, yes, this is going to be a tough mission, but we're going to win here, and we're going to work as hard as we can to get to it, and it's like, that's the mentality I've always heard that Coach Dye came in here with.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you gotta have that. I think you gotta have that to succeed at Auburn.
I mean, you know, Alex is asked about losing to Alabama and said, look, I haven't played him. Coach Dye's asked, how long is it going to take to beat Alabama? He says 60 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know.
You gotta have some of that at this job because
you – Oh, absolutely you do.
Yeah, and you know, look, I mean – there are things in the last few, well, especially the last two coaches that it really didn't work out at Auburn. Like, you can kind of see at points where things might have changed or where there was excitement. But one of the things I think is really refreshing about what we're going to see with Auburn this year is that I think Alex Golish has been very clear about the fact, like, this is going to be a build. This is going to take time. It's going to take a lot of hard work and a lot of energy. But it's all the same when you bring the guys in that they brought, they look at it and say, we can start winning right now.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You didn't get that as much of Freeze.
You better be concerned about winning as much as you can right now while you're trying to build a foundation for the future.
And especially,
you can't just keep putting people off and going, just wait another year or two.
Correct. And, like, you know, obviously, you know, the Freeze era, you know, had its issues, and, you know, a lot of things went wrong there. But, like, I think that's the other thing, is that we've seen that where the real fatal flaw with that just wait and see plan is, like, A, you might not get that time to wait. B, there's nothing keeping these guys around if you're telling them to wait. And then C, other schools have proven that you don't have to wait. Right? You don't.
Right. That's exactly
Indiana
right.
Indiana just won the national title. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss was close to making it to the title game. Like, you know, you ain't got to sit around and wait around. So I'm not saying Auburn's going to go make the playoff and win the SEC this year or anything like that. But what I am going to say is that I do like that mentality and that vibe of, like, all right, let's come in and let's max it out. Like, you go, Dan and I were talking this on the podcast earlier this week. Byron Brown, like, I'm sure you might have gotten calls at this point, or you'd heard the same thing. There were some Auburn fans that were worried about bringing a guy like Byron Brown in because they were afraid it might run a dude like Deuce Knight off.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I get why you could be excited about Deuce. And look, I think Deuce Knight could still be a very good college quarterback.
He very well could, but he's
not going to play this year, it doesn't look like. But
I want the best situation for right now.
You can only and that's where I think college basketball, again, with all its ups and downs, I think that's where college basketball's kind of gotten it figured out, where it's like, you have a one-year window. You can't bank on anything else. Like, you just know that you have it right now. And I think college football is getting to be that way. And so, yeah, if you're Auburn, would you love to be like, man, we would love for a guy like Deuce Knight to be our starting quarterback for the next 3 years? 100%.
Yes.
Absolutely. But you got to win now. You know, this place hadn't had a winning season in 6 years. You got to win now.
I mean, the thing is, when you're in a situation that Alex Golish is, and you had a quarterback like Byron Brown, if you don't try to bring him in, then I'm wondering, oh man, is he really the right guy?
Well, and also, it's like, Byron Brown was a huge reason why he got the job. Like,
well, that's right.
Just point blank, like, the fact that Byron Brown was one of the best quarterbacks in college football last year went a long way in Alex Golish getting this job.
Mm-hmm.
And so, why not take advantage of that? Why not be able to do that as much as you can? So, yeah, I mean, again, it's just outwork people and try to and see where it goes, but you got to do it for right now, because you can't worry and plan about the future. You got to recruit. You want to keep people happy, and you want to develop them, and all that takes time and patience. But, you know, I do like the mentality of this team. That's just like, it's a bunch of hungry guys that want to do it right now,
mm-hmm.
and not, you know, coasting off of what their recruiting rankings were, or, you know, being sold on a plan of, all right, well, wait till everybody else comes in here. Wait till we get these recruiting classes. No, it's win right now. And I think the good part for Alex Golish is the bar for improvement is pretty low. Win more games than you lose, and you're already taking a step forward. And I think they've got the ability to do that this year.
That's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Drew, we haven't gotten our bottom of the hour break yet, have we? Oh, we are way behind. So we will get to break. Still plenty of time, though. I mean, we're wide open. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Let's see. We talked a little football. Talked a little basketball. I messed up today. There was an opportunity for the media to spend a little bit of time with Auburn's new hitting coach Nick Amorati, and I just senility or old age or just whatever. I read George's email as 10:40 for some reason, and it was 10:20. Get up this morning. I got plenty of time. I'm on with Ben this morning at 7 o'clock, so I'm up early. I even waited a little bit, went out, cut the backyard, got in the pool, relaxed a little bit, took a shower, got out, and calmly got in the car at 10:19, thinking, yeah, it's 10:40, I'm good. And then I looked at my phone just to make sure it was going to be in the media room, and I saw that it was at 10:20, and the clock was turning 10:20 as I started the car, and I just turned the car off and went, okay, sorry about that. Hopefully we can get Nick on the air. I mean, I think a great addition for Auburn. My goodness. I mean, first of all, look, Gabe Gross, I love Gabe. I've known him, worked with him when he was first getting started as a broadcaster, which he's going to be doing some of. He'll be helping out some with baseball as well as player engagement and fan engagement, things like that. But it's great for Gabe that he's going to be able to spend more time with his teenagers and his family. That's great, and Gabe's done an outstanding job at everything that he has done, period, and not just at Auburn. But to be able to then go out and bring in the guy, Georgia has owned the transfer portal and has just rewritten the offensive record books since he's been there. And then before he was there, he was at Kentucky with a team that stole 120 bases on their way to the College World Series.
Yeah.
And now he comes in, reunited with Butch Thompson, who was the pitching coach when Nick was the catcher at Mississippi State. And, of course, the head coach was John Cohen.
So that was something that, like, again, I don't cover Auburn baseball. Henry Patton does a good job covering that for us. But we were talking about it, and when that happened, I saw Auburn just hired Georgia's hitting coach. And I was like, how in the world did that happen? And then it was like, oh – you know, you scroll down a little bit, and you're like, oh, well, he played, you know, he played for John, and, you know, Butch was on that staff, and you're like, okay, all right, that makes sense, a little more sense. But still, he had a great thing going at Georgia.
No doubt.
Georgia, in such a dominant year for SEC baseball, like they usually are, they were far and away the best team in the league.
Oh, yeah, they ran away. They ran away with the league this year.
And so to be able to poach that is pretty – and again, you – it doesn't happen without that familiarity and those ties, but even still.
On top of that, I mean, there is no question, you look at this roster and the bats that are coming back.
Yep.
Well, I mean, not just the bats. I mean, the pitching and the hitting, but I mean, the bats he's going to get a chance to work with.
Right.
You know, Chase Frelick, Bub Terrell, Ethan Bingaman, the McCrane brothers. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and like, again, you don't want to make, because baseball's such a long season, there's so many games, and you don't want to make the entire program, the entire existence come down to one weekend. But you've got knocked out of the Super Regionals the last 2 years, not hitting the ball very well. And so when you go and make a move like this and get a guy, then again, yes, Gabe Gross did a great job. People really liked Gabe Gross and all that. But, like, you're getting a guy who has been proven these last few seasons as good of an SEC hitting coach as there, maybe as good of a college baseball hitting coach as you can find everywhere. To be able to pluck that in, it is very much addressing, okay, this is what we need.
With an exclamation point.
Yeah, to get over the hump. This is what you need to get over the hump, and you go out and go get it. And, look, it's you know, it's a sign that, you know, Auburn continues to invest a whole lot in baseball, and, you know, for good reason. It's been a program that's been consistently as successful as any other on campus right now, and they want to get back to Omaha. You go make big swings if you want to get to Omaha, and this is a huge swing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know it's you know, there were a couple of folks yesterday calling in that were bummed a little bit that Auburn lost as many players as they did to the MLB draft. But it says more than a little to have five guys go in the top 10 rounds of the draft in back-to-back years and still have as many players returning as you do.
And it's cyclical, right? You know, like, if you put up a bunch of dudes into the league, guys are going to want to come play for
that's
it.
Right.
They're going to want to transfer in
any sport.
Here. You're going to want to – and look, and that's the other thing, too, is, like, you know, it's such a weird situation because there's no other sport like this, right, where it's like, you know, hey, I got this elite high school prospect, and he's coming. If somebody didn't take him early and says the magic words, it's like, well, that doesn't prevent you from still, like, you still go after those guys.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you still make those swings. And so, yeah, it is disappointing. And when some of your star players go ahead and make that jump, it is disappointing, but it only helps you. It only helps you long term for your program because now you're more and more like a place of, like, I can go to Auburn, I can play for a team that's a contender. But I can also get, you know, maximize my pro potential at a place like this, and that's the dream scenario. So yes, like, you lose a lot of you know, you may lose a lot of talent, you may lose a lot of players, but I will say, Auburn fans, you know, you've been watching Georgia and Alabama do the exact same thing in football year in and year out, and it's not like, oh, look at, oh, dang, we lost all these guys. It's like, no, we're just going to keep it rolling.
Yeah, you're going to get more now.
Keep that line moving, mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, I think Auburn baseball is getting into that position, and that's really, really exciting.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, so I'd love your thoughts before we get to our final break. You're a big Braves guy.
Yeah.
The Braves, amazing what they did in the MLB draft. Are you familiar with that?
I mean, oh, yeah.
They're about to go 12 for 12.
Yeah.
Sign their top 12 picks because they're already 11 for 12.
Yep.
And they've got almost an extra $500,000 to play with to try to get the catcher that's signed with Oklahoma.
Right. Yeah. No, they've did an excellent job of scouting. And look, I was very excited about getting an outfielder. You know, I think the Braves have done for so much for the last few years, several years, has been take best available player, usually a high school kid, and mm-hmm. usually a pitcher.
Usually a pitcher.
And look, worked out.
Oh, yeah.
It's worked out. But, like, you have this overwhelming amount of young arms to this point, and even though none of them can stay healthy right now, that's just this season. But the Braves, you know, you've got the Profar thing blew up in your face.
Mm-hmm.
And you've just had a hole out there. It's like, if you have Ronald Acuna long-term, you know you've got Michael Harris long-term. You just need another one. You just get you another one. And so for them to go get one of the best corner outfielders in college baseball this year, I loved it. I loved the pickup. I thought the way the board was going, they might have ended up with the Georgia Tech kid, Burrell.
Right.
And I'm like, that would have been easy because Atlanta kid, you know, going to the Braves. But, I mean, really excited about that. And then they go get another outfielder with the pick that they got from Baldwin winning Rookie of the Year. So that was exciting. So, like, they were addressing those needs. And then, like, man, they are going nuts right now and just finding value and, like, strategizing really, really well. They threw a whole lot of money at that pitcher that was committed to LSU.
Yeah, the third round pick. Yeah, they got $3 million over slot.
Yeah, they went $3
million over slot. Because they saved that much on the number one pick.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, teams were
getting three guys for $500.
Yes, that one's amazing. But, yeah, it's like the pitcher, the pitcher who's committed to LSU was like, you know, teams were scared off of picking him because it's like, man, he's probably going to end up going to LSU. And it's like, man, if we have enough money, we'll take him right here and see if we can go make a big swing.
Give him money that he would have gotten if he were like the 22nd or 23rd pick.
Yeah, give him money that he would not turn mm-hmm. down. And so, yeah, they've done a really good job. I mean, it's a team that's drafted well, developed well, and all that. I really liked. You were in a unique spot this past season, you would hope. You're in this unique spot where you do have such an early pick than what you're – for a team mm-hmm. that's usually in the playoffs
right.
year in and year out.
Yeah, it means a late pick.
You get a ninth pick. You get a top 10 pick. There's so much, especially with the way college baseball has been these last few years. Like, top 10 picks in these in drafts, these last couple of drafts, if you get a college guy, especially a college bat, they're up within a couple of years.
Yeah.
And
sometimes before that.
Right. And so, like, if you're Atlanta, it's like – go get that type of guy. Go get a guy that can move through the system quickly, can address a need right away, and you know, continue. And that's, you know, the position pool talent for Atlanta was pretty lax, especially in the outfield. It's just, you know, they don't have a whole lot going on out there, unless Eric Hartman continues to become, you know, one of the craziest players ever. But that was the thing that was like, I loved that. I was like, either get me the best shortstop you can get, that's college. I could see him playing reasonably in a few years, or get me a corner outfielder. And they got me a corner outfielder, and I'm hoping within the next couple of years he could man left field for us, because that would be huge long term.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about we'll get to in a little while, talking about what the Braves are going to do as we head toward the trade deadline on August 3rd. But we've got to get to our final break of hour number one. We'll also – should be able to let you hear some of Nick Amorati as he met with the media earlier today. We can do that at hour number two. We'd still love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
Welcome back into the drive. Final minute or so here in hour number one. Fun first hour, but yeah, we're missing your calls. Love to hear from you. I'm sure there's something you're interested in. Want to talk a little bit about the upcoming football season with media days getting started on Monday. Of course, Justin has been over watching basketball practice. We'll talk a little more about that as well. And if we have the opportunity, we'll let you hear some comments from Nick Amorati, who met with the media earlier today, Auburn's new hitting coach for baseball. So we're wide open, though, in hour number two. Love for you to join in. Stick with us.
Capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this Thursday. Just one more day before the next show will be all about, after tomorrow, will be all about SEC football. SEC Media Days getting underway Monday down in Tampa, and ESPN 106.7 going to be all over that. Presented by the Orthopedic Clinic, Auburn Plaza Bar and Lounge, Apex Pest Solutions, and the Depot in downtown Auburn. Join us Monday through Thursday for live coverage from Digital Drive as we get ready for kicking off another football season with 7 hours of local coverage every day. Doug Amos and the Max Roundtable from 11 to 2, Christian and Tripp with On the Line Live. I'll be here, but trying to check in with everybody who's usually here and as many folks as we can find down there as well. Auburn will be up on Tuesday. Let's see.
I'll be back Thursday.
Okay, cool.
For the show.
All right, we'll both be. Yep, that'll be the wrap up. It'll be,
yep.
Now this year the SEC very wisely saving Lane Kiffin and LSU, Steve Sarkisian in Texas for day four.
Yep.
Trying to, because there are so many times that by mid-morning on the last day, it's a ghost town. There's nobody left.
And you know, I've been a guy who, since, you know, we did radio when I was here. We did a couple years where I was there all week.
Mm-hmm.
But since I've just been riding, I just go for Auburn usually, and I like that.
And it makes sense. I mean,
right.
You know, unless there's a day where there's like, wow, two or three teams you that you're going to play.
And yeah. The interesting thing is because like in my I've done it in the past where it's like, oh, I'll go see what so and so Auburn's playing so and so this year, and it's like people don't really read that stuff, but they'll listen to it. Like mm-hmm. if you gather something, like say, you know, Auburn's playing Florida this year, Auburn's playing Vandy. Like if I hear something or gather something, you know, see something from Florida, Vanderbilt, and all, like that'll be good to use on our podcast but for some reason, like if you're like, hey, I wrote a story about this team, Auburn's about to play, eyes glaze over, like nope, sorry. So it is good for that kind of stuff, and so I'm gonna be there pretty much all day Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Like I will be there for that, for the duration of it. I don't know if I'm gonna be there the whole time, but to be around for that, and then I'll be back obviously here on Thursday. But yeah, no, it'll be very interesting week for sure. You know, and again, I think it's, you know, exciting, you know, when you're Auburn and you got a new era and there's some good vibes and some excitement around the program, and it's not like that. It's different than like the last season where it was like, well, this better work. Like, you know,
right.
Like there was
it's
some
time.
Yeah,
right.
It's time. And
we've been hearing about it for a couple of years. Let's see it.
A little different now.
Yeah, I mean, and if, you know, we've talked about it quite a few times. If Auburn splits their close games, then we wouldn't be in the situation we're in right now.
Correct. Exactly. So,
but they didn't.
Yeah,
and that's the next thing Auburn's got to do. They've got to win some of the games that are coming down to the wire at the end. You got to win some of those ball games, and Auburn has not done that over the last few years.
Yeah, and really, you can just point to offense. I mean, your defense has done well enough
to win
pretty much every game that you've been in these last few years. You just got to get it together on offense. So again, that's where Byron Brown comes in. That's where all these new pieces come in, and can Auburn get that? Because if you marry that with the defense that is going to be different than what you had last season, obviously in personnel, but like with the same coordinator, with some of the with some of the same foundation, you could see where the marriage would should work pretty well. You know,
that's
if you're
that's the hope.
That's the hope. That's the hope. And yeah, I mean, I you know, I wrote about it earlier this week at the Observer, where I went through kind of I went through what Auburn has been in red zone offense these last couple of years, really since the end of the Gus era, and what you've seen out of Alex Golish's. And it's a really fascinating thing. Alex Golish, since he's been a coordinator and as a head coach, has had one of the better red zone offenses in the country in terms of scoring touchdowns year in and year out. And Auburn these last two seasons
has been terrible.
Auburn has scored touchdowns on less than half of their red zone trips in each of the last 2 years. Only 9 teams in college football did that in both of those years, and only 2 teams did it in both. That's Auburn and Northwestern.
Wow.
So it's just like, can you get back to – meanwhile, you know, Alex Golish, in his tenure as a coach, he has been – in terms of red zone scoring offense, you know, a touchdown percentage, he's been 36th, 30th, 1st, 40th, 38th, and 14th in the country. Never been worse than 40th. Auburn has never been better than 40th, and have been usually over these last 6 years, they've ranked 78th or worse.
Mm.
And so it's like to see that where it's like, again, if you're Auburn, if they just have an okay red zone offense last season, you may win 3 or 4 more games.
That almost automatically gives you another 6 points a game. Six, seven points a game, and that makes a huge difference in your record.
I had the math pulled out during it.
You figure if you miss on one, that's 4 points.
So Alex Golish's offense have scored touchdowns on at least 2/3, so 66% of their red zone visits in 5 out of the last 6 years.
And Auburn's been under 50%.
Auburn's been under 50%. If Auburn would have scored red zone touchdowns at that rate last season, it would have had 8 more touchdowns than it was last season. A reminder that 6 of Auburn's 7 losses came by a touchdown. The other one came by 10 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that
it could have made up the whole difference.
Well, that should translate into at least splitting those 8 ball games instead of going 1-7.
And it's a fascinating
at least.
And it's a fascinating thing. So when you start breaking down, like, why, like, for Auburn, I think about 2 years ago, right? Auburn could not score, but they were moving the ball really well between the 20s, and they couldn't score. They couldn't finish drives. You look at Alex Golish; he's got a really good track record. His teams have a really good track record. Last season, they were 15th in the country in red zone offense. And you bring that in here with some of the same personnel, with the same scheme, and you just kind of break down, okay, what makes them so effective? A lot of it comes through Byron Brown, but then just I really like all the different ways they play to their strengths in the red zone. And one of the most underrated ones, I know Nathan King had a story earlier this week at Auburn 247 where he talked to strength and conditioning coach and talked about the pace, you know, how USF had the fastest team in college football these last few years and how Auburn's tried to get that point. One of the most interesting things to me, especially after watching Auburn these last couple of years, especially at in the red zone, when you play the fastest brand of college football in the country, there are so many times where you look at red zone trips last season for USF and they get the ball in the red zone and they are right back on it. And they just lean on you and they lean on you and they lean on you. And it might not be anything creative, but it's like, hey, Byron Brown just ran you to the 15, and he's immediately back up and getting the ball again and running, scoring a touchdown off of it. How many times in the last couple seasons did Auburn get in the red zone, and they slowed down, and it felt like they were trying to call the perfect play?
Right, let's get the right package in.
Just there's a value, especially when you're driving on a defense that's worn down because of how fast you've been going, how many plays you've been rolling up on them.
Get them on their heels. Go ahead and take advantage.
I mean, there's
don't give them a chance to catch their breath and try to reevaluate what's going on.
There's a play that I found where there's a sequence that I found where Byron Brown runs the ball. I think they're playing Memphis. Byron Brown has a run that goes like 35 yards. Big play, huge run. Gets tripped up at about the 12. He's down. And if you look at from the time he hits the ground to the time he snaps the next ball, it's 9 seconds.
Wow.
And he gets it, and he runs, and the other is against North Texas. defense is still looking around, the linebackers aren't set, and he just knifes right through them and scores. And it's like there's some stuff like that where I think right off the bat, before you even get to the personnel, I think just kind of the mindset of – because, again, I thought one of the biggest problems with Hugh Freeze, and we say this a lot of times about coaches, how like teams can like take on their coaches, how their coaches handle things and react personality-wise. And I felt like there was so much pressure – and there was so much like, so you get in the red zone, and it's like, oh, you have to score, and you get, they got and so
you,
tight.
You remember,
and he would freak out.
Hugh's opening press conference, yeah. Very opening press conference, he really talked about how proud he was of his red zone offense. Remember that?
Yep, I do. I remember that. And even though history,
because like, he was talking about different people helping out, calling different things, but he had the, you know.
He had
the red zone.
And I think the worst part was because like 2 years ago.
Because I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah, because 2 years ago, they're like, I think Auburn finished like 12th in the country in yards per play and mm-hmm. could not score.
Could not score.
And so, again, it's a pivot off of that. And then, like, yeah, I like how they get creative down there. You'll see some weird stuff in the red zone. You'll see, you know, tight ends doing a bunch of weird things.
Yeah.
You'll see some heavy sets. You'll see, you know, guys like Cole Skinner get the ball in their hands. They like to run a lot. It's not – I mean, it is just keep at it. Hammer, hammer, hammer. And then the big one, obviously, is Byron Brown. Byron Brown's such a good runner, as we know. But the stat that got me, last season in the red zone, on pass attempts in the red zone, Byron Brown was 22 for 36 for 13 touchdowns.
Wow.
That means he threw a touchdown one out of every three attempts.
Better than one out of every three, yeah.
and over half of his completions were touchdowns. Zero interceptions. He did not turn the ball over in the red zone once.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That is huge.
He was.
Well, but a big part of that is because he is such a threat running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got to play him, you know, honest. And if he makes a step,
yeah.
A linebacker or a safety is going to take that half step toward him. And somebody's got a chance create an opening.
In his two fully healthy seasons at USF, he was top 30 in the country in completion percentage and quarterback rating in the red zone. And then last year he was 13th in the red zone. It's just night and day. Like, you know, okay, this is a guy who, again, he's not, you know, Byron Brown, I would say Byron Brown's best quality throwing the football is that he's such a great deep ball passer. He is so good at letting that thing rip, and he's got really good receivers in this scheme builds for it. Can't do that inside the 20.
No.
You know, you can throw it a little, you can stretch the field a little bit, but you're not throwing the 40-yard bombs there. What he does a really good job of, though, is that he's so confident, and he knows where to go with the ball, and he lets it rip. And if he – the other thing he does really well that when you watch him in the red zone is he'll take a snap, and since he is such a good threat to take it and run, you see defenses start to hesitate, hold back, and he just needs to find one guy. And there's a really good play – this is the Memphis one. There's a really good play of him against Memphis last year. He takes the snap. And he gets there, and he's going through his progressions, and that first read's not there, that second read's not there. And he kind of sidesteps in the pocket, and you see a couple linebackers from Memphis immediately trigger down. And they're like, all right, he's about to take off. And as soon as he does that, Jeremiah Coger's in the back of the end zone, and he just throws a little fastball right to him. And that kind of composure, that kind of just let it rip kind of mentality, and doing it while protecting the ball, again – contrast that the last couple of years when you felt like when Auburn was in the red zone, it was like, if we don't get this play call right, it's going to be the end of the world. And it's just so tight, and you'd get things like false starts and substitution penalties and delay of games. And then, okay, well, we're in the red zone. I guess we have to throw it to Cam Coleman. And, like, sometimes that works, but if that's all you got, like, it's just it's not going well. Last season, Auburn had four. I think Auburn only had four different receivers catch a red zone touchdown last season. USF had eight different guys, and it's just like it. You spread like just. It's a lot more expansive.
It makes it much more difficult on the defense too.
If
they're having to defend everybody, if they're worried about anybody catching, if you've only got one or two guys, it's easier, especially when you're pinched in and it's tight down there in the red zone.
And meanwhile, their best red zone running back was Nekai Davenport, who's now at Auburn, and Byron Brown's an elite rusher inside the red zone. So it's just that could be the difference again. Like, you know, I feel like they're going to go fast. They're going to hit these big plays. But what the difference is like you don't want to be a team, which we saw 2 years ago at Auburn, where you hit big plays, and then when the field gets condensed and it gets tighter, you're out there kicking
field
goals.
Wait, can we back up 15 yards?
We're just kicking field goals every time we get down there. I think that's the thing is, like, when we're going back to earlier, if you have a defense that you feel good about and you feel like your offense just needs to put the points on the – just put some more points on the board, can you give that? Well, in the tightest situations, there's a really good track record with Alex Golish with some of the same personnel, and I think that should be really exciting for Auburn fans. And, look, you got to do it in the SEC, but, Golish has done it in the SEC. Did it really, really
right.
Well
he's been
the
in the SEC. And
his second
success.
Season at Tennessee, there was not a better red zone offense in America than Tennessee. So, like, that's the hope. And I think, again, we were going back earlier in the first hour, just having Byron Brown, if he can just carry it over, because he's going to know where to go with the ball.
Right.
I mean, he's got a ton of confidence. It's better than plugging somebody in who's new to this, and we've seen that the last few years where that doesn't always work out, even if they're good, even if they're talented.
Oh, that's right. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg didn't give you an opportunity in the first hour to talk a little bit about what you got. You've mentioned some of the things you've done lately there at the Observer. Just let folks know and maybe what you got coming up, and if they're not getting it, how they can.
Yeah, that red zone story we just broke down here in this segment, you can read that. You can read I did a story on we talked about the first hour, Champ Anthony, and just him going to the media days and why that's such a cool thing. Story on Thomas Dowd from Auburn basketball practice went out today. Got a mailbag out tomorrow. A lot of good football, a lot of good basketball in there. Dan and I had a podcast earlier this week. We'll have another one we're going to record tonight and get out tomorrow. And then I'm going to be in Tampa most of the week next week and putting out football stuff down there. So, AuburnObserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year. Anything we do, as soon as it drops, it'll go right in your inbox. So look for some more football, maybe a little bit of basketball in these next couple weeks as well.
All right. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Again, love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. We'll see if we can't let you hear some of Nick Amirati, Auburn's latest addition to the baseball coaching staff, met with the media a little earlier today. We'll play a little of that as well when we come back here on the Thursday Drive.
WarEagle.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew is at the controls, and we talked about it in hour number one. Auburn moving quickly to fill its opening on the baseball coaching staff, hiring Nick Amirati, who's been at Georgia for the last 2 years as their hitting coach, was at Kentucky for the three seasons before that, and has had just tremendous success with his team's offenses, and it hasn't just been the long ball. Nick is a guy that is very familiar with the Auburn administration and Butch Thompson. Butch was the pitching coach, and Auburn AD John Cohen was his head coach at Mississippi State. Nick started his career at Seton Hall and then wound up at Mississippi State as the catcher there for the Bulldogs under John Cohen. So that is part of the reason how Auburn was able to reach out and bring in such a highly successful assistant coach. And Nick met with the media a little earlier today. I mentioned a while ago I messed up this morning and wasn't able to get there, but Christian and Tripp from On the Line were there, and you'll hear questions, I believe, from both of them as well as most of the other regulars who cover Auburn as Nick Amirati met with the media. Hopefully we'll be able to get him on the drive before too long, but he's got to get things settled in and maybe see if he can help Auburn add another spot or so on the roster, as he's also been very, very proficient in the transfer portal, which Georgia has been really good at the last few years. So here is Nick Amirati as he met with the media earlier today.
For you, just talking about making the move, obviously some familiarity here, but the roster and that roster makeup, how important that was for you when you were looking to come here.
Yeah, absolutely. That's huge. Obviously, my prior relationship with Coach Thompson and Coach Cohen was a big factor as well, but the team coming back was a huge factor. I think we have forward to talking. A great group of guys. Got to speak with a lot of them on the phone already, and looking forward to talking to more with them. But, yeah, the team, I'm excited about it.
Hey, Nick, I'm Adam, but I just wanted to ask you, from really like your last two stops in the SEC, and especially just the variance of offense with those two teams, what do you feel like you've learned the most from those last two stops and having to navigate all?
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime you're in different places, different ballparks, it's really all just about finding out what's best for the team and scoring as many runs as possible. You know, there's a lot of different ways to score runs. We're gonna find every single way that we possibly can to do so.
Do you like to go by Coach Ammo at all, or are you?
Ammo, Coach Ammo, whatever, okay. Whatever you want.
Well, Coach Ammo, I'm curious about you know, going back to Kentucky 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and then Georgia this year. Kentucky 120 stolen bases, I guess 45 sacrifice hits, and then Georgia, you know, a few years later, you're, you know, setting records and home runs and stuff. Do you have a certain approach, or is it just by player, or has your approach kind of changed over time?
No, I think it's whatever it takes, honestly. You know, sometimes the game calls for a safety bunt or a stolen base. Sometimes the game calls to bang. I think it's whatever, just knowing your players and knowing the conditions and who you're facing and all the different situations, I think, plays a factor. But obviously we want to hit, and I think we just want to be aggressive, take everything that the defense gives us, and, you know, look for every opportunity that we can.
Could you maybe recap part of your journey with the game of baseball, growing up in New York and New Jersey, and then finding your way south? And have you always been a baseball guy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the day I was born, my dad said he bought me a catcher's mitt, and, you know, kind of been on that journey ever since. You know, growing up there, you obviously had to do a lot of stuff inside. And for me, I got an opportunity to come to the south, and, you know, I played at JUCO in Texas, and then ended up going to Mississippi State, and been in the South ever since. Love it. Love the weather. Love the people. Yeah.
How about the Southeastern Conference specifically? Has that helped your development being a part of this league?
Absolutely. It's the best league in the country, best coaches, best players, best fans. Everything about it is about at the top of your game to stay at the top, and you got to be at the top of your game to stay at the top, and, you know, it takes everybody.
What was it like being recruited by Butch and John Cohen back in the day and playing for those two guys? And what's it mean to you to be back, you know, sort of?
Same way.
Now more of a peer.
Yeah, it almost kind of happened the same way. I remember the first time talking with him, I was sitting in, I don't know, some class, and they called me, said, you know, they were going to offer me. I think I went, you know, being from New Jersey, I actually didn't really know much about the school. Went back, looked it up, called him back, said, I'm in. And kind of similar situation here.
You talked about kind of the fans, and you guys played here last year to see the growth and development of this program. How exciting is it to be?
Super excited. The fan base was unbelievable. It was a big-time SEC atmosphere, and to see what Coach Thompson and the administration has done with this ballpark, all the attention to detail, all the little things that they did. It's all about the fans. It's all about the alumni. It's pretty cool to see the attention to detail that went into every little aspect of this ballpark, and I'm super excited to be a part of it.
You mentioned the excitement for the roster returning, but how attractive is it having so many guys returning on the mounds as well? Obviously, you're that offensive coordinator role. There's nobody that loves putting up zeros more than you, because it makes your job just that much easier. What is it like having Coach Tiefert, having Coach Thompson there to set the tone on the mounds and make you where your job's just that much easier?
Yeah, the pitching staff was the best in the SEC last year. I mean, takes a little pressure off yourself that you don't have to score 20 runs every game. We'd like to. I mean, that's the goal. But, definitely getting to see those guys work with the pitchers is unbelievable. They're all super sharp. They get the most out of those guys. And, just excited to get to work with them.
Could you walk us through the decision process of coming here when the first Butch approached you, and what went into your decision, and why Auburn?
Yeah, it happened pretty fast. Obviously, the prior relationship with Butch, he's one of the best men, along with one of the best coaches in the country. You know, my family, my wife's from Mississippi, and I'm closer to home for her. And, you know, kind of all those different factors. The fan base here is unbelievable. The facilities, the resources that we have, the team coming back, all those little things.
Traylick, Bob Terrell, and McCrane brothers, Ethan Bingham, and that's a really good nucleus returning. What have you seen out of those guys about, you know, I guess, watching them last year and now maybe probably digging in a little bit already?
Yeah, they're unbelievable. They're unbelievable players. They're unbelievable people. Got to speak with them on the phone for a little bit. Yeah, I'm really excited to get to work with them. I'm happy I don't have to face them.
Coach, last season Georgia had the number one rated portal class, and I know you were a big part of that. What's your strategy when it comes to talent acquisition, both in the high school ranks as well as in the transfer portal?
Yeah, I think, you know, at least with the portal, being able to identify players fast, being quick and decisive with your decisions, but ultimately it's about getting the right people in the building, doing your due diligence with, you know, the evaluation along with the makeup check, I think is a big part of it. If you get the right people in the building with the correct amount of talent, you got a shot.
That's Nick Amirati, who met with the media earlier today. Yes, you know, hopefully we can get him on the drive here at some point. Love to do that. As you know, got to be a lot of excitement about Auburn baseball with all the talent coming back, and now, you know, this addition there. So that's fun. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Got a half an hour to go. Still plenty of time for you to join in if you'd like. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Thursday. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew at the controls, and we'll get to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Mike is up first. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Bill and Justin. I was wondering if you've had a chance to watch much basketball practice and your early impressions of the newcomers. And one thing I was wondering is that the guys that are coming off injury, I think it's Kimball and Freeman,
mm-hmm.
how do they look? Are they limited in any way, or are they full speed? Or,
well, Justin,
how does it look?
Yeah, Justin is the man. He's been getting up mm-hmm. early and going yeah. checking out practice.
Yeah, they've been out there. You know, I can tell you that both of those guys have been able to practice here in these last few weeks. I can't go into any specifics of returns or anything like that right now, but I will say those guys have been out there. You know, I can feel pretty comfortable saying it. But yeah, the newcomers, you know, we were talking about Thomas Dowd earlier, been really impressed with him and getting to watch him, especially just the way he rebounds, the kind of the hustle plays that he brings to the table. I think anybody can tell you, if you've gotten a chance to see him or you find some clips online that the team posted, Narcisse Ngoi is like every bit of what his size is.
He is a huge human player. Being.
Very, very big. You know, and I like the athleticism of Buki Aboye already. You can kind of see where you can get really creative with him. I think he also has got
a much different player.
Very different Narcisse. Player. Yeah, very different player. More like Cora, the modern center, whereas I would mm-hmm. say more, you know, Narcisse is more kind of like that big, big frame that you would imagine down low. And then, you know, the other one, Montas, is, I mean, he's been as advertised right now. He's shooting the ball. He is a very, very special shooter. Kevin Overton talked about yesterday when we talked to him after practice. He said, I've never seen a guy who can shoot like that as consistently as he can, especially wow. for a lefty. And that's the thing with Montas, is that you go back and look, pretty much every stop he's been in his professional career, he shot well over 40% from deep. So, really special player. He's got good size to him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there were some people thinking, is he closer to 6'4"? And it's like, no, he's probably closer to 6'7".
He's a big guy and is going to do well. Adam Olson, really good 3-point shooter as well. Great catch and shoot threat. You were asking about Kimball specifically. I mean, I think Auburn's really banking a lot on him being a guy who can be healthy for him and provide.
He's that third guy, right?
He's really got to be that third guard spot. I think he's your primary backup point guard.
Mm-hmm.
To Todd Pettifer. And I think, you know, best case scenario, you want to play Tahai Pettiford and Kevin Overton 30-plus minutes a game, but you don't want to wear him out over a long season, so they're going to need him to get ready to roll. Really like him. I will say this other thing about Kimball. Bigger kind of built than you would probably have expected right off the bat. I think, you know, obviously him, the injury he had last season, wasn't able to get on the floor, did a lot of hard work in the weight room, and you can kind of see that with him. But, yeah, good group. I can tell you first impressions of them just as a whole. This team's got a lot more shooting, outside shooting, than they had last season. Really, really, really kind of fits well. I mean, I think they do a good job of that experience. You can kind of see a lot more familiarity. You're not, you know, there are going to be a handful of guys that don't start on this team that have been key guys on D1 teams in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a night and day difference in what you saw last season from this team, because they had to break a lot of these guys in new for the very first time.
I thought it was really interesting. Mike, Justin in the first hour was talking about it, and I had not realized how much of a factor Tahad and Kevin had in the guys that came in. I mean, really helping – you know, sort of scout and evaluate the players they wanted around them. And I think that's a great idea, especially when you have two guys that you really trust.
Yep.
In Tahad and KO, to be able to say, these are the kind of guys that we feel like we can play with and we can win with.
Yeah. Yeah. Big for them. And I think, you know, KO was saying yesterday about Dowd and some of these guys, just like, he feels really good about kind of the makeup. You talk about the unselfishness of this team that he's really liked seeing as they kind of get to know each other on the offensive end of the floor. That was a lot there. But, yeah, basically I can tell you those guys that are coming back from injury there had been limited by injury last couple of years. They have been able to practice with the team. You know, I think just big picture-wise for this crew is that they're doing a really good job, I think, of, you know, offense kind of fits a lot better stylistically than maybe what you saw last season, where it was a very big change and wasn't always the best way to maximize everybody on the floor.
Great. Well, I'm very optimistic. Of course, I was last year too, but it's just from watching interviews with Steven, he seems like he knows what he's doing. He knows what he wants, and he's very confident. That strikes me as that way. And that, you know, that makes me confident, but I know the competition's, you know, fierce. So we'll see. But anyway, I really enjoy the coverage, basketball coverage on the Observer.
I appreciate it. So thank you. That's awesome.
It's a bargain.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. That means a lot. I really, really appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, thank you, guys.
Great hearing from you, Mike. 334-321-1390, and he's absolutely right. I mean, there's nobody that puts out more and better basketball coverage, especially than Justin Ferguson. Let's head back to the phones. We may talk a little baseball as Tex is up next. Hey, Tex.
Yes, I apologize. I was kind of going to call a little earlier, but I had to stop somewhere and take care of some business. But
that's all right.
So talking about our new hitting coach, I first heard about it from my son.
who played
for another former Mississippi State assistant, Lane Burroughs,
mm-hmm.
who's now the head coach of Louisiana Tech, but Josh was at Northwestern State. And he, Amoretti, I always want to say Amaretta. Amoretti was on the staff at Northwestern State for a while. And my son said, I still use things I learned from both Will and him.
Hmm.
That's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah, and Will Clark that Texas talking about. So yeah.
Yes. So that's who taught my son how to hit. So but those two in the background, and he just mentioned, he said it was really interesting the things that he would talk about, because as a catcher, what's going on, you know, and there were things that they learned even deeper about the game than just throwing pitches in certain places. And hitters learned to not tip what they're attempted to do. So, you know, guys who are going to bunt start moving their hands closer to mm-hmm. the front of the plate.
I don't think it's coincidental, Tex, that an awful lot of managers were catchers.
Mm-hmm. Well, all us smart people were catchers.
I don't know about that. They don't call it the tools of brilliance.
No, they don't. And I will just tell you, it is true. And so Josh talks about him. Josh teaches and was teaching in Atlanta. He's moving to Houston. So, but he was teaching at a facility there, both pitching and hitting.
Mm-hmm.
And he still uses things that he learned from those two guys.
Wow.
And they just happen to go to the same school. It's really kind of interesting. So it's pretty. I think it's a great hire. By the way, I love Gabe Gross.
Oh, I've got absolutely.
Pictures.
Me
Josh
too.
Josh has pictures with him when he was 5, 6, 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable. Great Auburn man. My guess is
a great man and a great Auburn man. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I think that his son plays a lot in this decision.
Mm-hmm.
His son is. You get to see I get to the games early. So I'm not like Bill who walks in the second inning.
Well, Bill has to work until game starts usually.
That is true, but that's okay. You come in the second inning. I'm just kidding.
I get there as fast anyway, as I can, man.
Yeah. I go early and watch him play catch with his son. Is just or take mm-hmm. his son take ground balls from him. It's pretty cool.
Hey, I'll tell you what's cool is their seats are right back behind us, and when he's not just somewhere else around the park listening to his son
okay.
talk. And I mean, it's more interesting to hear him talk than it is some of the some of the old folks that I sit around. He knows an awful lot about baseball.
Oh, he knows a lot about baseball, and I think he has a career, too, that's going to be pretty high level as he moves along. So I wish him luck, whatever Gabe decides to do. There's only one player, I think, that I've known that ever played for the Oakland A's that I probably would, and I did, go in a from San Francisco on a train underneath the bay, and they go to a place where you walk over in Oakland, and there's barbed wire across the walkway to the stadium. It didn't make you feel comfortable, but I went and watched him play twice there. It was pretty cool. He's a great human being, great, like
mm-hmm.
you mentioned.
Oh,
a
indeed.
Great man and a great Auburn man. So thanks for the time. I think we made a tremendous hire. And does it really surprise you with Butch?
No, not really. But I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you could be much more excited about Auburn baseball for next year and the future.
If I'd have got to go to Omaha and watch them play this year.
Yeah, but I'm saying for next year. At this point, just thinking about, Chris and Eric, everybody who got drafted decided to come back. That would be about the only way it could be even more exciting.
Yeah, I tell you what, the Waylon kid I was hoping was going to – they were going to wait and see what he developed. And – that was a nice arm that I would have loved to have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
So, all right. All right, y'all take care.
Good hearing from you, Tex.
All right, bye-bye.
We'll go ahead and get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in if you'd like. 334-321-1390 as we head into the final segment here on the Thursday Drive.
Hi, this is Tyler with Gutter Pro. Around here,
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final segment here on the Thursday edition of the drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson, we talked. We talked a little bit a while ago. When we were talking baseball, we got into MLB and the Braves a little bit. We were talking a little off the air, and it's pretty obvious what the Braves need. They need some healthy pitching, and they could use another bat.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion if you give me two arms that I feel like could slot into this rotation. Help you out until you can get everybody healthy, and then you can be. You just need more depth there for sure. This guy's had give me six innings. That's all I need. It's so hard. Like right now for the Braves, it's so hard to have guys get into the sixth.
Yeah,
and if you got this really good bullpen, you don't want to stretch them out too much. Just give me a couple of good mid rotation starters, like guys you feel like can just go in and do a job for you really well. You do that, and give me another impact bat. Doesn't have to be a superstar.
Now look, I mean. The Braves have they have a knack for quietly just all of a sudden, ooh, they got this guy. Now I'm not mm-hmm. expecting Scooble.
Right.
But, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it's somebody – I mean, the names that make sense. Sonny Gray's a guy that makes a ton of sense yep. because he's you know, he's from Nashville. He played mm-hmm. at Vandy. He'd love to pitch for a contender. He's a grizzled vet, but he mm-hmm. can give you
yeah.
six really good innings just about every time out. But and you mentioned Casey Mize. I mean, mm-hmm. that'd be a great get because
move.
That's somebody that would be happy to stay there, yep. and you could have him for a few years.
Yep. No, he's a guy that I've thought about as people have, you know, picked him as a potential trade ship for Detroit as he's coming into the end of his rookie deal.
Tigers are playing better, though. I mean,
they are playing better.
That's the thing. I mean,
AL,
a lot of the teams a few weeks ago that looked like, well, maybe they're going to be selling aren't so sure now.
It's going to be a lot of buying. And so it's like for Atlanta, again, it's just I go back and everybody's going to make this comparison, and it's obvious, but like back in 21 when they go out and get, you know, they go and get Jock Peterson and Jorge Soler mm-hmm. and Adam Duvall, and they all – you go crazy for him.
Oh, and nuts down the stretch.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, again, for me, it's like, you know, you would love to replicate that.
They don't need that many, really.
You don't
need
that many. I just need, you know, one or two impact bats you feel like can come in and get hot. And right now for Atlanta, you're in a pretty good spot where depth-wise, if everybody's healthy, and you got to get Ronnie back, and he's doing well. He had a grand slam today in Complex League. Get everybody back healthy. Hopefully the break helped reset some of these guys. You're in a spot here where if you can get a corner outfield bat or a shortstop, either one that you can kind of feel like you could work, you could put Mauricio Dubon, who's been playing really well this year, at the other spot and then have depth to rotate around. You know, mm-hmm. obviously Dom Smith's not going to be Dom. It wasn't Dom Smith forever. Mike Yastrzemski's got to get healthy again. I like the Jorge Mateo at bats, you know, when he plays, and he's very versatile. He can kind of play everywhere. And, I mean, kind of the real weird one, I mean, Jim Jarvis has played pretty good. Shortstop-wise, he's playing killer defense. You can't bank on that. But if you all of a sudden get one or two of those bats, and those guys can be bench guys for you, you can be more flexible there.
Absolutely.
That's the goal, I think. You know, you don't want to be relying on all that. You know, hopefully you can get to a spot where Sean Murphy comes back and you feel like you have pretty good depth at catcher, and you don't, you know, if Murphy can come back healthy defensively, he's an upgrade from what you get in Drake, and you can keep Drake.
You can keep both those bats in the lineup.
Yeah, exactly.
You can DH.
So it's just I just need a few moves to say, look, if you're the Braves, you're window of contention isn't going to stay open. It's not going to get any more open. It's not going to get any bigger from here. You got to start kind of capitalizing. Last year, you know, season kind of felt lost, got away from you, don't have to do that. So this year, it's just what can you do to get kind of get back into it and kind of solidify yourself as, you know, right now, you still got a lead in the National League. The Phillies played better, and the Marlins have definitely played a lot better here recently, but they're not like – I don't see either of those teams in like are absolutely terrifying as rosters, and you can't hold them off. But you just need to you need to reestablish yourself. You need to strengthen some spots on your roster, and you can keep going, and then see where it comes in, see what it comes like in October. Because again, the lessons from the 23 and the 24 season, or 22 and 23 seasons, especially for Atlanta, was like you could have this like record shattering offense and. What's it going to look like when you get into the postseason?
Pitching is critical when you get into the postseason.
So reinforce that.
Yeah, and the questions now, as we were talking about, you know, teams like the Tigers and others getting in contention. A few weeks ago, the talk was, well, find a pitcher for the Marlins and a hitter from the Nats. And I don't think those teams are in sell mode right now.
Yeah, the Nats could end up being, but they're still kind of in
Wild card. They're only four games back in the wild card.
Yeah, they're in shouting distance. But the Marlins are tied with the Phillies right now. Yeah, they're for that with the Phillies right now behind the
Braves. But, I mean, the Nats, I mean, they've got some guys that it would just be crazy for them to trade.
Yeah.
I mean, I mentioned C.J. Abrams a while ago.
If the Mets sell.
They might, but do the Mets and Braves, is that a mix? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I think the Mets are 12 games back.
Yeah,
I think the Mets are selling.
Yeah, and they need to.
Yes.
And so it's just going to be interesting to see like what they end up doing as a seller. Everybody in the NL Central still feels like they got a shot. Maybe the Reds don't, but they're kind of it. And then the West is like, kind of your usual suspects. Like the Giants have been terrible. The Rockies are still the Rockies.
And the Rockies never trade their better players anyway.
No,
they hang on to them too long.
Or if they trade somebody, it's usually relievers. How the Braves got Tyler Kinley. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting. And then like in the AL, you're in a position in the AL where pretty much everybody's still in the hunt for the most part, and so
it's gonna make there are a lot more teams that are looking than are looking to move players right now. So it's going to be crazy.
If I'm an American League team, outside like a couple of them, I feel like, man, we could be a few moves away from making a push for a playoff spot.
Ferg, before we run out of time, one more time, let everybody know about the Observer and how they can get it.
AuburnObserver.com, $6 a month, $60 a year. Get you access to everything. We're going to email it out to you. So tomorrow you get a mailbag and a podcast. You got plenty of football and basketball on the site right now. Yep. And next week we'll be at Media Days. Have plenty of coverage from that. So, AuburnObserver.com.
Have a good trip down to Tampa, and we'll see you back in here next Thursday.
Yes, sir.
That's going to wrap things up for the Thursday drive. Coach Don Dunn in tomorrow. He's going to make his second visit. Did a great job filling in on Monday, and I believe we'll check in with Dan as well tomorrow. So looking forward to that. But we're out of time here on the Thursday drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.